Welcome to a new edition of the Rictus podcast. My name is Jose Manuel Simian, and here with me is Marcelo Baez. Hello, Marcelo.
What's up, Jose?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
Well, you know, getting through it.
Getting through the end of the year.
The end of the year, yes.
A warm end of the year here in New York. That's exactly what we're going to talk about, our favorite Rictus moments in Latino pop culture.
Yes, we have, we only launched in what? Like October, was it?
Yes.
September? Yeah, like early October. So we don't have perhaps a whole, you know, the whole gamut of the year written in there, but we remember lots of things.
Yeah, our heads are full of pop culture garbage as usual, which makes you forget easily. But here's the thing. I think we should say that besides the fact that you normally, when you do this recount of the year, you remember the latest things, more freshly than the things that might have happened in January. There's another thing. If you've read Rictus, you know that we are interested in pop culture, but we're not like one of those websites that care only about or see Latino culture as a war of advancement. I'm not going to talk about Hamilton and the glory of Lin-Manuel Miranda's triumph on Broadway, which I think is great, or the triumph of Jane the Virgin as a sitcom making ways into mainstream television. Those things are great, but those things are too obvious, no? I mean, I'm happy for that, but that story, there's a lot of people telling the same story. We want to tell a different story.
Yeah, there's a lot of people covering those topics, and there's really no need for us to rehash them. Plus, you know, we like to cover other stuff in that usually other websites will leave out or wouldn't like to touch or address, you know, because, I don't know, it might not be PC and, you know, everyone wants to be positive about things.
And also because it's our blog and we want it to be subjective.
That is the core.
I'm going to get down to business. I'm going to start with the five moments in Latino pop culture that I've chosen. The top moment for me was the Latina fan of Trump. This crazy Colombian lady who jumped on the stage in Vegas, branding a copy of People magazine that had Trump on the cover. And to me, one of the first alerts, besides being a woman who was wildly, yelling that she was Hispanic, fan of Trump, was that choice of words, the fact that she declared herself Hispanic instead of Latina.
Right, or even just saying Colombian, right?
Yes. And then, of course, she said she had seen Trump in a dream. Remember that? She went to CNN.
That was so wild. But, you know, weird, like oddly scripted and also kind of, you know, I mean, just forced and strange.
Let's listen to a clip of her on CNN when she said she saw that she was going to meet Trump in a dream.
And three nights before he came to Las Vegas, I told my husband, oh, I have a dream. You can't imagine, I saw Mr. Trump in my dreams, and I saw him like I had the opportunity to give a hug. And I have my Facebook page, and I wrote so many times, Mr. Trump.
And of course, to me, I say this is one of the top Latino moments of the year because the whole thing with Trump hating on Latinos and Mexican immigrants has been one of the defining Latino moments of the year in general. But yeah, this crazy Colombian Hispanic lady was the cherry on top of
cherry.
The funny side of it. Anyway, moving to my second Latino moment or Rictus moment of the year. Is something I wrote about, is Juan is becoming the new Pitbull. And by this, I mean Juan is becoming the go-to token Latino artist that gets invited everywhere, that is sort of succeeding in making the crossover into mainstream American culture. But, you know, this year, at the end of the year, he was the one Latino invited to John Lennon All-Star tribute. And 2 days before or after that, Frank Sinatra tribute.
And he was in the American Grammy, right? He was like the first singer or the first person to sing a song in
Spanish. I don't know how many years.
Right. And, you know, going back to that, I mean, we actually, you know, you mentioned he's a token Latino, you know, the go-to Latino now, whereas, you know, Pitbull used to be the token Latino. And I wrote another thing about how Taylor Swift, you know, when she was playing in Florida, she brought Ricky Martin and Pitbull on stage, you know, as like her token Latino people.
Yes.
And, you know, you mentioned, you're like, you know, it should have been Juanes, you know, I guess. And it should have been. I mean, I think, you know.
Well, that's Taylor Swift choosing the wrong man.
Yeah.
Again, story of her life.
Yes, right? Exactly.
I know. Let's, you know, and when Juanes actually sang at the John Lennon tribute, he did a version of Woman, which is not, it's just a bit like the John Lennon song equivalent to Pitbull. It's safe and it's boring. Sorry, to Juanes. It's safe, it's boring, and Juanes somehow managed to do like a karaoke version of it, like, and a sober karaoke.
Wait, but don't forget, he also sang for the Pope.
Oh, yeah, but the Pope left.
Yeah, the Pope left his performance. But Juanes was, you know, he was tweeting about it and he was really excited. He took his mom to the concert and, you know, he took a picture with the Pope backstage, but, you know, when he still hadn't performed. But then, you know, the Pope has a super busy schedule or whatever, so he had to leave. I mean, I think he just cut out on purpose. But
let's move on. I was going to say we are going to play a clip of Juanes doing Woman, but I don't want everybody to fall asleep. So I'm going to move to my third rictus moment of the year, which is Don Francisco getting fired by Univision.
Yeah, Don Francisco, that was a big one.
But, you know, the thing that happened with Don Francisco leaving and finishing Sábado Gigante was that at first, the first reaction from a lot of people on, you know, my Facebook feed was, mm-hmm. Oh, no, I can't believe this. I'm so sad. I grew up with him. And I was kind of shocked. I was like, wow, I thought you were like sort of an edgier Latino and you would have hated him, not only because he wasn't funny, but it was because he was misogynistic. He would make fun of poor people and all these things. And then there was like a backlash. There was a woman who wrote something on the Guardian, but she lives in California, if I'm not wrong, I'm not mistaken. Her name is Aurora Borgado. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing her name, but she said basically it was high time that this racist, sexist guy was thrown off TV. And it was funny because that got, you know, back to Don Francisco, you know, in Chile, we're like, it's like this Wizard of Oz thing where somebody writes something that gets published in England and everybody...
and then they pay attention to it.
They pay attention to it. And he was like, I didn't know that I was being sexist. And then like 2 weeks later, he sort of did a mea culpa. I was like, well, yeah, I know I did a few wrong things over the years. He didn't apologize for, you know, the harassing his models.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He got sued and everything.
Moving on to my fourth and second to last moment of the year, Latino moment in pop culture, is Morrissey. This week, he was playing in Lima, Peru, and he did a version of El Condor Pasa. And I know this seems like a random thing to choose, but to me, it's very interesting because it's like another step in Morrissey's like love affair with Latino culture. And it's another step in Morrissey becoming like this weird, like overarching figure in Latino culture, and in him becoming more Latino. We've talked about this in several occasions. How in his autobiography he writes his like love letter to Latinos, and especially in California, and he says that he found his family. But this year, it seemed like Morrissey to me, like it seemed like he lived in South America. He went to Chile. He played like 3 concerts. He went into a political talk show to sing, which he wasn't a guest on. It's a talk show that doesn't have performers, but somehow he decided that he wanted
it's
to go
Morrissey.
Play.
Let him in, man.
It was very interesting. And then he goes to Peru and he sings El Condor Pasa with the Simon & Garfunkel lyrics. And people, Peruvians seem happy, not offended.
You should explain, you know, what El Condor Pasa is to maybe people that are not familiar with the song.
If you've been at a subway platform, or you've been to Europe and been to a square, you see a guy with a giant zampoña and a bad New Age background tape playing from a CD or even a cassette tape in the background and a giant amplifier, you've heard El Condor Pasa.
There you go.
Morrissey was also in Argentina, where he sang the Leo Garcia song about himself, which is a great song. And you know what? That's another step in the Latinization of Morrissey. Why don't we listen to a bit of Leo García's Morrissey?
Sabrá tu novia que escuchamos Morrissey, que me extrañas más de lo que ella te extraña. Sabrá tu novia que escuchamos Morrissey, con quién estabas la vez que te llamábamos. Pero hay algo que vos no sabes, y es que hablamos mal de vos una vez, y bien de alguien que...
And we're back with my fifth and last Rictus Latino pop culture moment of the year. And you might see this coming. It's that day when Emilio Estefan, the wizard of Latino pop culture, the Miami warlord of Latin pop music, decided to, after Trump, I started with Trump, I'm closing with Trump, insulted Mexicans. He decided to do this anthem called We're All Mexican, and it was terrible. And I don't know what was worse, if the song or the video clip.
I think they were both just as awful and equally offensive to just taste in general.
And also, like he said, you know, he was bringing all these like famous artists into it, but basically all the Latino, the famous people were just, had recorded a YouTube like greeting saying, hey, we're all Mexicans. And the actual singers in the track were like these proteges of Emilio Estefan that nobody has ever heard of.
Dude, I mean, that guy...
Most of them.
Yeah, I mean, he knows how to take advantage of an opportunity, I have to say. You know, badly sometimes, obviously, but...
This is the same year in which he put a musical on Broadway.
Yeah, and he did that documentary.
The HBO documentary.
Yeah, the HBO thing, you know, where he's, like, talking about how great, basically, his roster of artists did, you know, built up, like... Latin music in America single-handedly somehow, but you know, it's so self-serving. Like everything that guy does is so self-serving.
Just to prove a point and to finish my bit of the show, let's listen to a little clip of Emilio Estefan's We're All Mexican. We are done with that, thank God. Marcelo, what about your five moments of the year?
My five moments are some moments you probably didn't even know happened. Some of you, if you haven't been reading us, others, you know, maybe you have. The first one is Enrique Iglesias, and Enrique Iglesias actually destroyed many things this year. First, his relationship with his father, you know, who he's been fighting with in a way, doing a whole, you know, they have like a back and forth competitive, I don't know what to call it, but there was also, you know, he chopped off his finger, was it? Or, you know, part of his hand when,
yeah.
when he tried to pet that drone in that concert in Tijuana, I believe.
Yes, which brought to mind the time that he was at the Festival de Viña through the trophy, La Gaviota, that they give to artists. And he threw it to one of his fans and cut her forehead.
Enrique Iglesias is so destructive, you know. But, you know, lastly, he also murdered, destroyed Nacha Pop's great song, La Chica de Ayer, live in concert in Marbella. And he did so by actually attempting to sing it live and did so incredibly out of key.
But does this prove to you that he's not a real singer? Is that what you're trying to get at?
I mean, I'm sure people probably know that or just kind of assume that. But it pokes a hole in the whole, you know, how you would actually need to be talented or have to be talented to be a rock star or a pop star. I mean, in this case, you don't. You know, you just kind of have to be positioned correctly, you know, within a certain family, a certain medium.
Do we have a clip of that? Why don't we listen to it?
Yes, there is a clip, unfortunately. Here So there you have it.
Wow, that was painful.
Enrique Iglesias. There's moving on to my second
moment, yeah.
My rictus moment. I don't know, this, everyone must have felt, done a collective sigh when Cirilo finally got some love from Maria Joaquina. It was actually this month, late last month.
You're talking about the characters from Carrusel, of course, the TV show.
Yes, so the character from Carrusel, yes, Carrusel de Niños. I don't remember his real name, but Cirilo, he was a black kid in Carrusel de Niños, his telenovela from Televisa.
Uh-huh.
That was, you guys got it down in Chile, didn't you?
Yeah, it was huge in Chile, somewhere in the 90s, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was like late 80s, early 90s. I mean, it was, you know, it's this telenovela about these kids, you know, in grade school.
Just a weird, like, subgenre that hasn't gotten, you know, we haven't gotten that much of it recently. Like, those soaps that were, like, made for kids, but with the drama were basically the same things that happened to adults.
It is a really strange genre of telenovelas because, again, it's technically aimed at kids, but I feel like everybody used to watch it. And they used to touch on some really heavy subjects. Like, I remember there was this one episode where Cirilo, who, like, throughout the whole novela, you know, can't get any respect from Maria Joaquina. It was, like, the pretty white, blonde,
the mean
snobby
chick.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mean chick, who also happens to be, like, again, you know, beautiful and, you know, and privileged and white and blah, blah, blah. There was this one episode where he bathed. I want to say it was like either in milk or something like that, you know, because he wanted to become whiter so Maria Joaquina would like him. So, that's fucking crazy when you think about it, you know, for like that would never fly anymore.
Well, but you know, wouldn't it? I think in some places in Latin America, it would still fly. There's so many people these days on my Facebook feed talking about, you know, black Latino, Afro Latinos versus white Latinos and all that stuff and like showing pictures of people doing blackface in Latin America still.
I think, you know, obviously it's an important topic, but it's just such a weird or strange way to address it, you know, especially for like a children's soap opera.
Uh-huh. And this was one of the most popular posts on Rictus this year.
Yeah, that did really well. I guess a lot of people wanted to see Cirilo finally get some from Maria Joaquina after all this time.
What was your third moment, Marcelo?
Yeah, there was. We didn't actually write a lot about this in Rictus. I mean, I think I wrote one post, but about him doing a comeback. But Rodner Figueroa got fired from Univision earlier this year.
The fashion.
And that was a big
commentator.
Yes, the fashionista, the Univision's fashionista. He's often on El Gordo y la Flaca and all like the red carpet events, you know, critiquing fashion for, you know, telenovela stars and pop stars. And that's precisely what he was doing on El Gordo y la Flaca when he decided to compare Michelle Obama to a character from Planet of the Apes. And he got canned.
And he was shocked that was considered racist or reason enough to fire him.
I think, you know, for most of us, we weren't shocked that he would do that comparison, which is, of course, awful. Like, we were shocked that Univision fired him for it because they let a lot of crazy stuff fly. Do you remember that soccer thing with, like, the puto, whatever that was? I don't...
Well, that was weird during the World Cup when, you know, there were a lot of people complaining about how Mexican fans would chant puto, which is a slang, I mean, a curse word, a very offensive curse word against homosexuals every time the goalie would kick a goal kick. And then Univision sort of in the end relented, and the commentators read this statement from GLAAD, the Sexual Minorities Association, Gay and Lesbian Association. And the funny thing was, of course, the double standard. Univision constantly objectifies women and sells cheap thrills. And this same guys who read this statement, you know, talking about how much they respected gays, were like making all sorts of inappropriate jokes 5 minutes before. So the whole thing with Ronnie Figueroa, I think, is the double standard that Univision and many other media, the Latino media outlets, have towards culturally inappropriate topics, I think, or culturally sensitive topics. Moving on to your fourth point, in a nod to the mission of Rictus, you managed to mix here very high culture and very low culture, the highest and the lowest of trash.
Yes, we have been trying to bring those two worlds together by writing stuff about how, for example, Mario Vargas Llosa basically left his wife after celebrating 50 years of marriage with her almost, you know, immediately after doing so. He took off and started dating Isabel Preisler, Enrique Iglesias' mom.
I mean, he was probably dating her before. He just somehow wanted to hit the benchmark. Always the overachiever,
yeah.
Marito.
Yeah, what I mean, why did he wait? You know, why did he even celebrate?
I think you want, you know, it's hard when you won the Nobel Prize. You want to achieve everything.
Yes, you do want to. You want to hit those marks. You know, you have to keep hitting those marks if you're gonna be that guy. And then I guess for Mario Vargas Llosa was, you know, to be married for 50 years before immediately taking off with another woman. You know, this Spanish socialite and
super socialite. Yeah.
And, you know, as you've mentioned before, this isn't even the first scandalous thing he's done, correct?
Well, Mario, yeah. I admire his literature, at least his good books. The last four or five books have been awful, in my opinion. But I really, Conversación en la Catedral, for instance, changed my life. But what I wanted to say is that this is the first time that he's sort of dated outside of his family circle. Because first he ran away and married his aunt, la tía Julia. He wrote an amazing book about it. And then Patricia, his wife of 50 years, the mother of his children, was his cousin. Not his first cousin, but still technically his cousin. So cheers to you, Mario, that you moved out of the family.
Yeah, finally, right? He walked away from the incestuous cycle that he'd been in.
But that, and there was a famous punch and a black eye.
Yeah, he gave
Garcia Marquez is a famous photo of that. It happened in Mexico City.
Yeah, exactly. Which
well, there were ladies, man. But sorry to interrupt you, but I think I read somewhere that this time he had said to Patricia, his wife, ex-wife now, well, this is for real. It's not like all the other ladies I've been sleeping with all these 50 years. This time, this is real love.
Yeah,
so
see?
You got to understand, basically.
You could be, again, a Nobel Prize-winning author and still be kind of a douche. It's not indicative of anything.
And what about your fifth point?
So, yes, my fifth point. God, this was hard for me. I was going to do Miss Universe, but then I'm like, I don't know. Everyone's talking about that. I was going to do Camilo Sesto's facelift, which was also a great story on Rictus and got everyone talking. But I had to settle on Doña Florinda's recent scandalous declarations where he told Pati Chapoy, or she told, pardon, Chapoy on Ventaneando, one of the big gossip shows in Mexico, that Chespirito never wanted to have children with her. And this is a big deal because, you know, forever she's always been considered as this, like, you know, husband stealing pariah that, like, everyone in the press hated because Chespirito was married when they met and had children. And the reason they started dating, I mean, was also because he broke Doña Florinda and Kiko Villagrán. Because they used to be dating, you know, when they started doing the show, Kiko and his mom on the show used to date. And Chespirito broke them up by telling Kiko that, you know, the company didn't look kindly on employees or co-workers dating, the company being Televisa. So then Kiko was like, okay. Plus, you know, Chespirito was also Kiko's boss. So then Kiko was like, okay, cool, you know, like, I'll back away, you know. And then, like, immediately...
I'll do it for the job.
Yeah, I'll do it for the job. And then immediately after, Chespirito started dating Doña Florinda, like, it was no thing. And then, you know, divorced his... Actually, no, he never divorced his wife until about 10 years ago. I think she either passed away and then that's when he married Doña Florinda. So yeah, this was a big deal for her to come out. And, you know, especially because it was the first time she was granting such a big interview after Chespirito's death, where she was talking about...
Which happened like about a year ago?
Yeah, and about a year ago, you know, I wrote a post for Manero and you wouldn't publish it because you said, you know, because you were right, you know, I totally was not
well, his body was still warm, Marcelo. You wanted
his body was not even dead. It was not even cold in the grave when I was already talking shit about Chespirito, because he did a lot of really shady stuff. You know, he took in a lot of blood money from like drug lords. He played in
we went on tour Chile while there was an international boycott against Pinochet,
and again, you know, the whole like taking his friends, you know, woman under like these very shady pretenses. So, you know, Chespirito was a weird person. He's also, you know, he's also always super conservative. And a lot of people don't know this or don't talk about it, but in Mexico, he was a big supporter of El PAN, which is the abortion-hating, like, conservative party. And he did a lot of campaigning for them. And yeah, Doña Florinda came out and did this great interview, great in-depth interview where she kind of just let it all out.
Well, she waited, Marcelo. She would just follow my advice. She waited a little bit to start bad-mouthing her husband.
I didn't want to do it. I wanted to come out with that right away. And you're like, no, Marcelo, we need to be tactful about this. And yes, you were right.
But anyway, we are ending this podcast and ending the year bad-mouthing famous Latino people.
Terrible.
Latino sacred cow. So... I think that's fitting. And it's been a great year, or at least a great half year for Rictus. I think that's it for this podcast, Marcelo. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jose. Merry Xmas and all that. Let's see what comes next.
And of course, everybody who's listening can find us on Facebook, but more importantly, on rictus.co. Thank you so much and keep listening.
Ciao.